Well, we're honored to have Brother Don Randall with us tonight again, all the way up from sunny Arizona. And he brought the sunshine with him, didn't he? And the nice weather. And when he leaves, it'll probably go with him. And that ain't fair, is it? Praise God. Come on, Brother Randall. I appreciate his ministry. I remember the first time he spoke here was on 9/11. And I never forgot what you said. They're trying to scare us with heaven. God bless you, brother.
Thank you, Preacher. Appreciate that very much. It's a joy to come back, and I'll try to make sure I get the right button turned on this before I do anything. I think. Does that sound like I got it? Amen. It does, don't it? Okay, I can hear it myself. All right. It's a joy to be here. Joy always come back. We have, we love our churches. That helps us and support and prayers for us and everything. But we have some churches, there's just something there. I don't know how to explain it, that you just feel like, you know, you're part of it when you're there. And it's good to come back here. This is one of our favorite churches. It's been a while since we've been back here. I think 2007, Jerry? Six, I think it was. I'm not sure. And that's a long time ago. And a lot of things have happened since then. Mr. Randall and I, we really had a desire to die. We thought we were going to die. We'd die in Ireland. And we still miss it. And we talk about it a lot. And we look at pictures a lot and cry a little bit now and then, you know. But it's always a blessing. But God brought us back because of medical reasons. And Mrs. Randall had her bout more than I have. My problem was when I got out of Vietnam the last time, I got exposed to some chemicals over there called Agent Orange. And so they couldn't treat anything like that. And the VA was having me fly back twice a year. And that got to be expensive. And then Mrs. Randall started having trouble with her heart. She had cataract surgery first. We had to fly back to America and get that done because I don't have enough time to explain how, you're going to learn real quick here, not long from it. But we had social medicine over there, and we come back here, and what do we got? Social medicine. We could have stayed there and got the same treatment, probably a little bit better, a little bit sooner. But anyway, we come back, and Mr. Randall's sugar got real high. We put her, went to urgent care, and they said we need to get her to the hospital, so they put her in the hospital. And we found out after she was in the hospital, the doctors got more concerned about her heart than they did her sugar. And they called a heart specialist in, and he tried to do some things that they'd done over there to try to get her heart beating right, and could not do anything for her. Sent her down to Phoenix, Arizona, to the hospital down there, and the doctor put a pacemaker in, so she's got a pacemaker now. And so she's got that, and then after that happened, she fell against a cabinet we have in our house, solid oak, and she found out it wouldn't move, but her shoulder did. She busted her shoulder all up, had to have a partial shoulder replacement, and then after that, she started having some problems with her back and went to the doctor. The doctor took x-rays and stuff and found out she had a fracture in her back. She had an old one. She had a new one. And we were used to the system over there, so we didn't know we had to call the hospital to get an appointment. We thought the doctor would take care of that. And finally, Mr. Randall, she called Cottonwood Hospital, and they said, well, there's no doctors here can do the procedure that you need. So then we called a hospital up in Flagstaff, and they told us the same thing. But they did give us a doctor that could do it. And what happened, and I don't know what vertebrae or what, I don't know much about this stuff. But anyway, it started to collapse and got small. And what he was going to do, the doctor said he would go in, put a balloon in there, blow that up, and pack it full of cement, and that would take care of the pain for her. And so we got to that doctor's office. He took an x-ray that morning, came back out, and said, Mr. Randall, I got bad news for you. It's too late. There's nothing we can do for you. So she's had to live with some pain, and this trip hasn't been what you call the easiest trip on her, but we wanted to make it. It might be our last one. Only God knows that. Do pray for her, and then pray for my brother. He's a younger brother under me, And we thought he had lung cancer first, but it's not lung cancer. He's got had a tumor in the back pressing against his lung, I think it was. And then it got up close to his throat, somehow affected his throat. And then he got pneumonia. They had to go down into his lungs the other day and clean them out. And the doctor said, well, I've done everything I can do. We're going to have to send you to Columbus. And so he's going to be transferred to the cancer research or cancer center in Columbus. I don't know what it's called, but he'll be sent there and then see what happens there. But the good news was he's gotten saved, and we thank God for that. And that was the thing we was worried about, more concerned over than anything else. So do pray for him. And little Austin, pray for him. He's a real blessing. He's 6 years old. He got saved over a year ago. And maybe two, over a year ago, he got saved and baptized him. And we've been praying for him for about 3 years. And the men, we've been praying over him. Ever since we've been praying over him, the cancer has been, you know, dead. And not long ago, just a couple months ago, they decided, the doctors did, he had something in the back of his eye. They had to remove the eye. So they removed his eye on the Friday we left. And we left, I think, the next Monday, I think it was, we left. And do pray for him. He's a real blessing. He loves to take up the offering. And I keep saying, Austin, would you like to pray? He said, my dad. And they told us that Sunday, after he got out of the hospital and came to church, he took up the offering. No one asked him. No one told him. He just prayed. And they said it was a sweet prayer that you ever heard. And he's a blessing. He gets a hold of me. He says, Pastor, he says, what about me and you singing this morning? And he loves nothing but the blood. And I can't sing. I don't have voice. I love to hear you sing, brother. I sound like an old bullfrog. But I do it anyway. We have a good time, you know, and the people enjoy it, and thank God for that. And so just pray for him, and God would be with him. We don't know if he's going to lose the other eye because he had cancer in both eyes. There's a good possibility. His mom and dad, my wife led his mom to the Lord. I led the dad to the Lord. And they really have been dealing with that boy in a very blessed way. I mean, he was prepared. It wasn't a big shock to him or anything. And they're continuing to work with him with Braille. And then they have him close his eyes in the house and take a cane and get around the house. And so they're working with him. And he's a real blessing. I wish we could have brought him with us. He's just something to be around. On the way down to the hospital to have that eye removed, he just leaned up. He was in his car seat. But he said, Dad, he said, you know what? He said, when I get to heaven, I'm not going to have a glass eye. I thought from 6 years old, that's pretty good. And praise the Lord for him. He's a real smart young kid, and we thank God for him. All right, if you have your Bibles and want to turn with me, 1 Corinthians chapter 7, and I want to find what else I can find here. I got something else I want to share with you. I don't know what I did with it, but there it is. I want to share how you're turning there. I want to share this with you. A little thing I pick up every now and for laughs, and talking about two elderly men from a nursing or from a retirement center were sitting on a bench under a tree when one turned to the other and said, Slim, said, I'm 83 years old now, and I'm just full of aches and pains. I know you're about my age. How do you feel? He said, Slim said, I feel like a newborn baby. He said, you feel like a newborn baby? He said, yeah, no hair, no teeth. I think I'll just wet myself. I thought that was pretty good, you know. I got another, and if you're not in no hurry to get home, well, I got the driving to do. You don't have very far. But anyway, this is a hospital regulation required wheelchairs for patients being discharged. However, while working, a student nurse said, I found one elderly gentleman already dressed sitting on his bed with his suitcase at his feet who insisted didn't need any help to leave the hospital. After a chat about the rules began being rules, he reluctantly let me wheel him to the elevator. On the way down the elevator, I asked him, "Is your wife meeting you with the car?" And he said, "I don't know." He said, "She's still upstairs in the bathroom changing out of her hospital clothes." So, you know, I thought, boy, that's something else, ain't it? But he got a free ride anyway. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, if you will, verse 29 tonight, and I pray I can be a blessing to you. I want to be, and you've all been a blessing to us, and I wish I had more time, but I do appreciate this church and want to thank you so much for helping us when we needed some heating system done. When my wife fell and broke her shoulder there, we had to change a heating system. And this church and a black church I was telling a preacher about down in Mississippi, we were down there not long ago, and I preached there. Loving people, we really enjoy being there. They have a few white people there, but it's mostly black church, and Brother Charles is a pastor, and we've known him for a long time. And we had a good time there. And there, another church has really been a real blessing and a help to us. So we thank you, ladies, and thank the church here for all your help. Let's look at one verse, verse 29 tonight, if you will. It said, but this I say, brethren, the time is short. It remaineth that both they that have wives be as though they had none. Now, I'm having trouble seeing that because I didn't put my glasses on. And so Paul's talking about the time is short. And I thought about that many a times, and I'm sure you have. You wonder, you know, how much time you got left. I like to think I'll live a long time. My average in my family on the men's side is about 81, 82 years. Well, if that's the case, I got about 6 more years, and that's going to be about it. But I'm planning to go a lot longer. I like to be like Mrs. Randall's granddad. He lived to be 105 and got shaved when he's in his 60s. His wife got saved. They were married 81 years. She died at 99. And you talk about a man that loved the Lord. I mean, he was a blessing to us down through the years. We thank God for that. But, you know, you think about sometimes, you know, Paul talks about the time is short. So I thought about that. You know, a lot of times we'll say, if I had more time, or if I could, I would. And we use that word a lot, you know. And it means a lot. But Paul says, brother, time is short, and that is important. So what I want to do, just in a way of introduction, ask you a couple of questions. What would you do if you were told you had a year to live? Now, that'd be a shocker anyway. I don't want to hear that. I told my wife and I told my boys when they were both home, I said, the way I'd like to go on a Sunday morning. I'd like to be preaching. I'd like to hit maybe a strong point or something, and then a massive heart attack, and I'd just fall over. I know that'd be tough on my wife. But I told my boys, I said, what I want you to do is get a couple of men, drag me over here, set me in a chair, and don't worry about it because that's where I used to be. I'm not there anymore. And so I told my wife, I said, just put me in an old burlap sack and throw me along the road somewhere. It won't make any difference to me, you know. But time is short. We just don't know. We just don't know. And, you know, I'm liking to think I'd like to live a long time. But, you know, what would you do if you were told that? What would your reaction be? And that's something, would you change any of your plans you have now? And I believe our whole attitude on life would be different if somebody told us that. If a doctor told us that, we just had a short time to live. I think I want to give you just a few things, some things that I would undoubtedly think that you and myself, if we were faced with this possibility, we would change. We had a gentleman when I pastored and started a church in North Carolina before I went to Ireland. And his name was Mr. Ward. And his wife and daughter and son come to our church. Brother Ward never did. He went to another Baptist church. I don't know why. We never could get him in. His wife and son and daughter loved the church and everything. And we stopped out there at their house on a Saturday one day, my song leader and I, and we were talking to him a little bit, and the kids were inside, so we was just talking to him, and he was having trouble with his car. He had a little Volkswagen, if I remember right, and a taillight wasn't working right. He had a short in it. And so I had been a mechanic down through time, so I helped him, got that thing sorted out. He said, "Preacher, you know, I've been having a real sore spot in my leg." And he was a meat cutter. Everybody in Whiteville, North Carolina knew him. And he said, "You know, I got a sore in my leg here." And I said, "Well, Brother Warren," I said, "have you ever been to the doctor?" He said, "No." I said, "You know what? You need to go. You need to go see a doctor and get that checked out." Lo and behold, it wasn't long. He went to the doctor. He was in the hospital. They called me up and asked me to come down there. I got down to the hospital, and the doctor met me. He said, "I'd appreciate it. Would you please, would you be willing to tell him he's only got 6 months to live?" Now, that's a hard thing to do when you're a new preacher. And so I told him, we cried, we looked at verses, we prayed. And you know, he got over that real quick. And boy, you talk about a witness. I mean, he was at home, and the church where he went, they'd have an ambulance come and get him. They'd take him in a bed, and he'd sit down, or he'd lay in bed down front so he could hear the preaching and everything. But when he was finally, they sent him home, and he was in a hospital bed, and everybody would come into that house. There was one question he asked everybody. He said, "Do you know if you die, you go to heaven or not? Are you saved?" He was concerned. He knew time was short for him, but he didn't know how short the other people's time was, and he was concerned about their salvation. And I think that's important. So I think if this would happen to you and I, one of the things would be, I think time, we would look at the value of time a little bit different. You know, we look at the clock, and you do, and I do, and probably none of us are excused from it. And we look at the clock, and I say, "Well, you know," sometimes I'll say, "Well, I'll get to that tomorrow. And I probably should have done it that day," you know. And so I think we would value the time. I think we'd look at things different. I think we would do some other things differently than we do now. I think you would earnestly desire to try to recover the wasted hours of past life. And I know we can't go back and relive. You know, a lot of us, you know, we sit down through life, we say, "Boy, I'd like to go back and live that all over again." You know, I got thinking about that. I don't think I really would, because I wouldn't change anything probably, and I'd be the same. And so I'm better off staying right where I'm at and be where I'm at this moment in time. But, you know, we would do that. And you'd begin to immediately, I think, count out. I think sometimes we'd ration. And I think we'd use our time a lot wiser than we do right now. And that's important. I really believe in all my heart. It's a blessing to see little Austin. I mean, I hate to keep using him, but he's such a little blessing. And he comes up, and he loves to sing "Nothing But the Blood." And he loves to sing "Jesus Loves Me." And it's just a thrill just to be around that little boy. He'll excite you and get you excited about doing something for the Lord. And we got a little coin. A man in was coming to our church. He passed away. Mr. Church was his last name. And he got these little silver coins, and it has John 3:16 and other verses on them. I don't know if you've seen them. But little Austin, he loved to get them things. Man, he'd go downtown with his mom and dad into the grocery store. He'd come up to somebody, and he'd just stand there and give it. I mean, if they don't take it, he's going to stand there until they take it, so they'd be better off to take it, you know. But, I mean, he doesn't give up. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, we sort of, and if you're like me, sometimes, you know, we sort of tuck our tail between our legs and run and hide or something like that. But, you know, it's a blessing just to be able to talk to people about Jesus. You never know who you're going to talk to that you might win to the Lord, and thank God for that. And so, you know, I think we would use time a lot different than we do right now. And then the priorities of life, I think, would be different also. Certain things, once important, no longer longer have much meaning, like money, like cars, like possessions. I was born and raised down in the southern part of Ohio, down around Greene and Clark County. I was born in Greene County in Yell Springs, and I grew up in Clark County, up close to Springfield. My father was a farmer for many years, and when I went to Vietnam and got messed up the last time there, they put me out, and I come back to Xenia, and I got into a business there. And one of the things I decided one day, I mean, nothing was really exciting like you want. When you're in a Marine, I mean, adrenaline's flowing, especially when you're in combat. I mean, you know, things happen then. So I started to race stock cars. And, well, the only reason I got rid of them is because I got saved. My wife got rid of them, not me. She got rid of them. But God put me in a hospital, and she needed a little bit of money, and somebody offered. She sold my car, my trailer, all my tools, everything I had. So it was a blessing. Thank the Lord for that. But all those things, that used to mean so much to me. I really enjoyed getting out there and do that. I don't know what about it. I got in a bang up, a wreck one night out there. My wife wasn't there, which was a good thing. That's the first one she missed. And that was the worst one I ever had. But, I mean, it's exciting getting out there and doing that. My brothers come up to me one time and said, Don, said, man, we'd like to do that. I said, well, how about you just run the next race for me? No, don't think. They'd thought about it, but it was just a thought. That was about it. But it is a lot of fun. But anyway, a lot of things like that. You know, we would look at it a different way. Other things long taken for granted sometimes becomes priceless. You know, like the love of our family. Boy, what a blessing it is to have children that really love the Lord and love serving the Lord. I was talking to brother back there, and I had your name on my mind, and brother Bob Rosier, and I knew it. That's what it was. But you know, my youngest son is in Arizona. He pastors Mojave Baptist Church there. And Jerry works with me and always has and probably will continue to do so. And Cheryl, our youngest daughter, is married to a preacher in a Baptist church down in North Carolina. Well, they all were missionaries in Ireland at one time. Then I have an older daughter and you know, things, you know, you love your children and you can't, sometimes you'll have maybe a child or something that just, it just doesn't seem, you know, I don't know, they're not close to you like you'd like for them to be. My mom and dad, my oldest sister was the same way. All the rest of our children, us, we loved our mom and dad. We told our mom and dad how much we loved them and we hugged them and kissed them. And you know, we enjoyed mom and dad, you know. And my children are all that way, except the one up in New York. You know, once in a while we'll get a call from him. It's hard to understand why. But, you know, you love that family, you know, the love of your family. I love to be around not only my children. We got all those grandkids now. And now we got three great grandkids. Two of them we haven't seen yet. And the joy just to be around them. I mean, I found out, man, I'll tell you what, I didn't know life was going to be so nice. Them grandkids are such a blessing. You can bring them home. You can spoil them. You can do all kinds of things. And then you send them back home and say, you straighten them out. They're yours, you know, and not mine. But, you know, it's a good thing we can enjoy our children like that. And then every day's provision of our health and strength. You know, a lot of times we take that for granted, don't we? I'm so thankful. You know, when I was in Ireland for 30 years, well, 5 months, we were like 5 months being 30 years there. And I had a lot of trouble with colitis. I was in the hospital a few times with it, and they do a whatever you call they do to you. I won't go into it, but they do that to you and check you and see if you got cancer or anything. They take biopsies, stuff like that. You know, since I've been back here, God's been so good. I haven't had any trouble with it. They've taken me off all my medication and everything, and I thank God for that. I thank God for the strength and the health I got. We was having trouble with our sugar, my wife and I both, not long ago. Well, it's been a little while back. Both of our sugars, especially mine at that time, was over 400. And so we went over to the VA, And I tried again to see my health providers. You don't see doctors anymore. You just see nurse practitioners. And so I tried again to see one and say, well, you can't get in today. You have to make an appointment. Well, when can I get in? Did you? Well, I said, I need to see somebody now. My sugar's over 400. And I wrote down, gave them a copy of every day. I checked my sugar in the morning and at night. I gave them a copy. And I said, well, we'll give it to the health provider. And then she'll get a hold of you. Well, that went on for a few weeks longer and done the same thing again. Nothing happened. And so we decided we'll go over to the emergency room. I got to the emergency room and the doctor put me in there, laid me on a table, hooked me up to all kinds of heart things and everything. And he came out and said, you know, your heart's good. Said, you're in good shape for a young man. I said, Doc, I didn't come in with my heart. I came in because of my sugar. And so we ended up having to get a civilian doctor, outside doctor, to be able to get our sugar back where it ought to be. So we're both on insulin, but God is blessing. We thank the Lord for that. But you appreciate health. You really do. You appreciate what strength you have. There's a lot of things I can't do that I like to do, but there's still a lot of things I can do, and I thank the Lord for that. So, you know, we'll value time differently, and the priorities of life will be different. And then the use of that last year. I wonder what we would do. How would we use that last year if we were told that? You know, no two people will react the same in a situation like this. And, you know, we don't know what happened. I can remember a guy had to go to his doctor, and his doctor, he went to the doctor. He said, Doctor, I'm having this bad ringing of the ears. And the doctor examined him and told him, he said, you know what? Said, you got about 6 months to live. And said, you better go out and go out and get you a new clothes, new suit made, and get a ticket, go around the world, enjoy yourself. You only got six months to live. And so he went to his tailor, and he thought, well, if I only got 6 months, I'm going to have me a white silk shirt made. And the tailor measured him everything and got up around his neck, and he said, your neck size is 16, I think is what it was. He said, oh, no, said, I wear 15 and a half. And the tailor said, if you wore 15 and a half, you'd have ringing in the ears. So, you know, some things don't work like you think it's going to be. But what a blessing anyway. But you know, we would look at things and we would do things a little bit different. Some would immediately care for all the obligation. I think of Mark 16:15, go out into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. Our heart is saddened because we left Ireland. We've seen 15 missionaries come and go in our 30 years there. And we left Northern Ireland. Right now, Northern Ireland, there's not one American missionary there right now. And Mr. Randall and I would go back if we could, but we know we can't because of health reasons. There's no way to do that. But, you know, we're praying that God would send some good men that way. I mean, there's a lot of places over there. And then when I'm back here, and I'm really concerned about America, because there's so many places in America where there needs to be the gospel, our churches. And thank God for churches like this one. But, you know, you go into some of the churches we've been in, you know, you go there and, I mean, they were running, you know, 150, 200, and you go there on a Sunday night, we was at one, and they didn't have hardly maybe 20 people there. And, you know, that's heartbreaking when you see that. You wonder what's wrong with people in America. And it's not only America, it's around the world. But, you know, you wonder about that because it seemed like people are not, they don't have any discernment for the Lord whatsoever. They don't care about God. When we were in Ireland, we took some of the young people, my other son too, and we took some of the young ones and we went to Romania. And we had a joy there. I got to do the preaching, and I preached in a gypsy village. And in Ireland, the gypsies there, you have to watch them all the time. But over there in Romania, boy, they were a blessed bunch of people. And just a little gypsy village, and they didn't have much of anything. Matter of fact, before the services that night, we went around and visited, I think, about 8 families. And the last family we was at, last house, they had 2 rooms, if I remember right. I think in that and in Nigeria. And they had 4 families living in that 2 rooms. And the mother was preparing their meal for that night. And all it was one potato. She was slicing it thin, laying it on top of an old coal or wood stove, whatever, could find to burn. And she was cooking them like a potato chip, I guess. And that was going to be their meal. And then after that was all over, and it was winter. I mean, snow on the ground. It was cold. But I'll tell you what, I believe almost everybody in that village came to that church that night. And I got to preach to them. Boy, what a blessing that was. Those people, I mean, you know, they've had it rough. When they was under communism, they said they had food, but they didn't have money. And now that they got freedom, they have money, but they don't have food to buy. And so the gypsies are worse off than the other people are because the government doesn't help them or anything. So the preacher was trying to get a few jobs for some of them. But, you know, just preaching to those people and just to look at their face and see the joy that they had. I mean, they were excited about serving the Lord. They didn't have anything, but they had Jesus. They had everything. It reminds me when we was in China, a young boy got saved over there, and God called him to preach. And in China, when somebody is saved and the government finds out about it and they're called to preach, the government goes in, they take the job the person had away from them, they throw them out of their apartment they might be having, they take all their clothes. All he ends up with is what he has on out in the middle of the street. And that little Chinese boy lifted his hands up towards heaven and he said, "Now just me and Jesus." I mean, you talk about something sweet, that's something sweet. I mean, you know, we think about, and I hate to say this, and I hope you don't take it wrong when I say this, but I believe in America, we've had it too good. I really do. I think that's some of our problem today, is we've had it too good. And you know, I was sad when 9/11 came, and you know, it just looked like things were going to turn around, people were going to get excited about the Lord, but about 6 months later, you couldn't never know it ever happened. So a lot of those things happened there. But you know, we would use that last year very wisely in the Lord. I think a lot of things we would do. And then I think we would writing of wrong. We'd make things right that were wrong. Sometimes, you know, our conscience sort of covers things up. I don't know how you want to say that. But anyway, I think we would be trying to do some things that we should have done. I got a son-in-law that was called to preach. He never did preach or anything like that. That saddens my heart. I don't know about anybody else, but it saddens my heart. I'm glad when God called. Let me just back up with our daughter, youngest daughter, Cheryl. She was very young, and in Ireland, I got her. She went in town with me one day to get traveler's check and airline tickets. I was bringing Kathy, our oldest daughter, back for a short time. And we were in Londonderry. We was on the water side. Londonderry is divided. It's got one side of the river, the water side, which is Protestant, and then the other side is the bog side, which is a Catholic. And so I told her, I said, let's just take a short trip. Let's go down through the pass. You know, the old cowboy said, you know, let's go through the pass. Dangerous thing you ever wanted to do in your life, go through the pass, take a shortcut. Me and her got in the car, we was going down there, and lo and behold, we got stopped, and we got right in the middle of the strong part of the IRA there, and there were seven guys, all seven of them were masked, three of them on my side of the car, and three on her side, and one in front, and they stopped us, and I said, "What do you want?" He said, "We want your car." Well, they thought if they could get my car, they could put a 500 or 1,000-pound bomb in it, park it in the middle of the street, and the police knew by my license plate that I was a Baptist preacher, and they wouldn't be too concerned about it. And I was arguing with the guy. I said, "You can't have it." And he said, "Well, why not?" I said, "It doesn't belong to me." He said, "Who's it belong to?" I said, "It belongs to God." And the whole time I was arguing with this guy, I'm praying, and I'm saying, Lord, what should I do? You know, I didn't know what to do. And it just seemed like the Lord said, just put it up in first gear. Everything was standard shift. I just shifted up in first gear as I was talking to him, and I just took off. I told my daughter, get down on the floor. Thank God that guy in the front wasn't there no more. I never even thought about him. And I probably heard a thump, thump, and then I'd say, well, that's the way life is. But I just went on, and I told Cheryl, I'd say, get down on the floor, because I didn't know if they were going to shoot us, what was going to happen. And we got home, and for about 3 or 4 days, she was under shock. She was in shock. And she told her mama, said, Mama, the last place on earth I want to go is Northern Ireland. And her husband was preaching in North Carolina, and one day Cheryl calls up, and she says, Mom, Alan said we're going to be missionaries. And my wife said, well, where at, Cheryl? Said, I don't know. Alan hadn't told me yet. So when he tells you, let us know, you know. So it was a little while longer, and she called again. She said, Mom, Alan said it started with an I. Well, she said she didn't ever want to come back to Ireland, so we was thinking about India, Iceland, and we was trying to figure all these places with I's. And Mama told Sharon, said, when you find out, let us know. She called back later and said, we're coming to Ireland. We were shocked. She came back up there, and she went and started knocking on doors in that Catholic area right where we were held. And they wanted to keep us hostage. And, you know, that's God. That's all you can say. That's God. She said, I never want to go to Ireland again. And there she was, out knocking on doors right where we were stopped. And, you know, it's a blessing to see what God would do if we'd just allow him. And so, you know, we like to do things and make things right and make things work right and ask the Lord for what he would have us to do. Now, I don't know where you are tonight or how you stand or anything like that. I hope you think about time and you try to value that time. We've tried to use ours wisely. Coming back, we tried to pick churches that we haven't been in for a while and churches that mean something to us. Now, when I say that, I'm not saying the other churches don't mean anything to me, but I'm talking about churches that, like this one here, that are close to us, if you know what I mean. I enjoyed your preacher singing tonight. I really did. I hope you got some records, brother. I'd like to take a truckload of them back. But anyway, but it was good to come here and see some old faces. It's a joy to do that. And so we have to stop and think, you know, if this year God tells us or a doctor tells us that we only have so much time to live, what are we going to do? Paul says time is short. And I believe in all my heart, we're living in the last days. I don't know how you feel about that. I really do. We see a lot of things happen out where we're at. We see a lot out there. We read a lot. We try to get information we can. But, you know, we're living under some horrible times right now. And I never seen our government so out of touch with people as they are today. I mean, we got a president that doesn't like military people. We got a president that doesn't like the country that he's serving in. I don't know how you feel about him. I don't think he's actually an American citizen. That's between you and me and the Lord and whatever. God knows all about that. But, you know, it's sad. This was a great country. God blessed this country in a mighty way. And God has used this country to reach other countries. God has used this country to back Israel. And now we don't really, as a country and the leadership we have, we don't care anything about Israel. You know, let Israel. She's surrounded by the enemy tonight. And, you know, we pray a lot for Israel out where we live, and our people do. And I believe this country is going downhill very fast. I believe our Lord's coming is very near. And I think we need to take that little word if and just say, if the Lord would come tomorrow, what would we do today? If the Lord would come next week, what would we do next week. And we need to put God first in everything and seek God in what he would have us to do. I don't know how much time we got. A little Indian boy, his mom and dad comes to our church, Harold and Darlene, and Derek's the Indian boy. He's 12 years old, and his mom and dad had a little daughter first, and she was a Down syndrome daughter, and she passed away. And the doctor said they would never have any more children. Lo and behold, God gave them Derek. And when God gave him Derek, Harold took his Bible and he said, "Lord, I want you to teach me from the Bible how to raise that boy." And that boy's already surrendered to be a missionary. He sings in our church. He's a real blessing. I believe God's going to use him in a mighty, mighty way in the days to come. And I believe Austin too. And we've tried to do everything with Austin, with the family there. And I told him down through many times, I said, "You know what? We sing a lot of songs that are written from a blind lady, Fanny Crosby." And you know, little Austin got up not very too many Sundays ago. Somebody gave him a harmonica. And he'd just blow on that thing, make all kinds of sounds and everything. That Sunday morning, he got up, he played that harmonica, and it sounded like he was playing a song. And he said it's a song that he made. And he loves doing that. But you know, we need to use what we got for God's grace and for God's mercy. And God will bless us for that. Let's stand tonight. Their heads bowed. And let me just ask you a question too. And I don't know how you are here tonight, but I'm sure on Sunday night, like most of churches, a lot of people are saved, and I pray that you all are. But if you're here tonight and you're saved and you love the Lord, just slip your hand up the testimony for the Lord. Just wave it around a little bit. The devil hates that. He hates that and turning pages in her Bible. Don't like that either. Just put them right back down. Maybe you're here tonight and you say, "Brother Don, if I die right now, I don't know. I don't know if I'd go to heaven or not, but I'm concerned." Is there anybody like that? Slip your hand up and say, "Would you pray for me? I'm concerned. I'm not going to embarrass anybody, not going to make fun of you or anything, but I sure would like to pray for you." Maybe here tonight you say, "Brother Don, maybe I haven't been using time like I ought to, and I wish you'd pray for me that God would help me to be wise what God has given me." And I think the most important thing God has given us is time, and I don't believe we have much time left. And I believe we need to use it wisely for the Lord. And you say, "Would you pray for me that I'd use that time wisely for the Lord?" Does anybody like that? Slip your hand up and just say, "Pray for me." God bless you, sir. God bless you. Many hands. I thank God for that. Maybe you're here and you got someone like we do that needs prayer. And you know, that's important. I really covet your prayers for my brother and for little Austin. Both of them mean a lot to us. And you know, maybe you have somebody you're concerned about tonight. And you might say by the uplifting hand, "I got someone that I'm concerned about, and I wish you'd pray for them." Is there anybody like that? Slip their hand up. I mean, I do. I mean, I don't know their names, but God knows. God knows. And thank God for that. Just put them back down. And let's just, I don't know if the preacher's going to come up and play, or a brother's going to come up and play, or what, but whatever. But if God spoke to your heart in some way, maybe about the value of time, maybe about a loved one, whatever, if God spoke to your heart and you need, won't you come tonight just down to an old-fashioned altar? There's nothing wrong coming. Just praying for your church. Asking God to bless. I mean, you got a tremendous preacher. I really love him and the Lord. And we appreciate this church so much. And you ladies. And so if God spoke to your heart tonight about anything, won't you come down to an old-fashioned altar, get on your knees and ask God and pray. Whatever God would lay on your heart, you do that as God allows us.
We're going to sing 345, "Jesus, I Come." 345.
God spoke to you, come tonight. Would you do that?
Out of my bondage soul.